Okay, today we are going to talk about periodicity. All right.
Okay, our next speaker is Rick Yee. We'll talk about periodicity.
All right. So we focus on the complex case. So the K group is generated by complex vector bundles. Here's a quick review. First, K of X, right? That's a difference of two bundles, or isomorphic classes of bundles. The reduced K group, in the case of a connected space, well, I guess I should use pin. It's just that rank E is equal to rank F. Now we have this higher K group. There are two possible definitions. One is this, the other is that. They are equivalent because this theory is really defined to be this theory. The plus means one-point compactification. And this theory, of course, immediately gives you that. And this space is the same as S space. You can see this space here. Right? Rn cross X, then one-point compactification, which is exactly this space. Suppose the little circle means X. The green is the sphere. So here you see already X, but at this particular point, the base point, X is reduced to a point. Now, in a special case, if I look at high K group of a point, that's nothing else but the reduced K group of the sphere S in. Now, let's come to the statement about periodicity. There are several versions. The first version is this. The K minus 2 of X is isomorphic to K of X, or more generally, K to the minus N minus 2 of X is isomorphic to K to the minus N of X. We have a natural isomorphism. For example, how do you go from here to there, right? Now, remember this guy from the last slide lies in that space. So how do you pass from X to S2 cross X? You multiply an element in the K group of X by the so-called Bott class, which is an element in K of S2. The Bott class is H minus 1, where H is the half bundle, which is the same as the anti-canonical bundle of CP1. If you use a clutching construction, up hemisphere, lower hemisphere, then the clutching function for H is exactly 1 over Z. So the Bott class plays a very important role for Bott periodicity, at least in this version. Now let's look at the special case. Before we have the general statement where PT was X, but now let's assume we have a point space. Then the statement of Bott periodicity is this one, but we know this is exactly the reduced K group of S in plus 2. So that's the Bott periodicity. And that means for even dimensional sphere, that's Z. For odd dimensional sphere, that's 0. In short, you can put all the K group together, you have this. That's actually a statement about the ring structure. Now, version 2 is almost the same as version 1. It's a slightly more general. Well, here's the statement. On the left-hand side, we have the tensor product of the two groups. The tensor is taking on integers. On the right-hand side, we have K group on the Cartesian product. Now, well, we have the isomorphism. That's the about periodicity. Now, the nature isomorphism here is again, well, no, it's given by the tensor product, the external tensor product. So if you have, for example, one element here, one element there, think of vector bundle here, vector bundle there. So E is vector bundle over X, F vector bundle over Sn. Then you can put them together, get a bundle over X cross Sn. So that's the isomorphism, the natural isomorphism. Now version 3 is about the homotopy groups of unitary groups. Now here's one possible statement. Let's take the direct limit of unitary groups when the dimension goes to infinity. Then the statement simply says pi n plus 2 of u is isomorphic to pi n of u. So all the even dimensional homotopy groups are zeroed, all dimensional homotopy groups are z. Now you can make this more precise without going to direct limit. Then that's the statement where the little n is less than or equal to 2, n minus 3. Now, we'll just briefly record the definition of homotopy groups. Pi 0 of U is just set of connect components of U. Pi 1 is the fundamental group. So that's the homotopy classes of loops, which preserve a base point. Now, when you go to pi n, you replace S1 by Sn. In other words, you wrap the sphere as in your space while preserving the base point. Well, so we have three versions. Now, why do we care about periodicity? First, it is a fundamental structure theorem for K-theory, which enables computations. And second, of course, homotopy structure of the unitary group is basic for everything about these groups, like vector bundles. Now, the third thing is debug periodicity leads very quickly to atom isomorphism, and then leads to Artiya single index theorem. Then third, fourth, of course, we need that for deep rings. Here's a little remark. The unitary group is homotopy, H means homotopy equivalent to a special unitary group. General linear group is also homotopy equivalent to unitary group. And this follows from Gram-Schmidt orthogonalization, and this follows from this vibration. What's that? What's not right? Which one's not right? This is correct as far. Maybe for some dimension, maybe not for all dimension. Okay, let me put question mark here. In the end, we are going to use some equivalence between them, at least for some dimension of the homotopy groups. Yeah. So that is not quite right. Yeah, there's one exception for pi 1, right? Other than pi 1, all the homotopy groups are the same. Yeah, thanks. Right. Exactly, yeah. Now, the three versions are equivalent. Let's take a look at the equivalence between version 3 about unitary group, homotopy unit group, and version 1, the high K theory, high K group. Now, well, first let's look at the case of a sphere Sn, K, the reduced K group on Sn. By stable homotopy theory, that's isomorphic to stable isomorphism or isomorphism classes vector bundles. And that is given by this. This can be seen in terms of clutching construction. So the periodicity here, that's version 3, is equivalent to periodicity here. That's the special case of version 1. Therefore, version 3 is immediately equivalent to special case of version 1. Now, how do we see that version 3, the unitary group version, implies the general version? Well, that goes through a bit of homotopy theory. Here is one vibration. BU is the classifying space for the infinite unitary group, right? That's the universal principal fiber bundle. Then look at this. Well, EU is contractible. Right? So using this vibration, you immediately deduce that pi n of the base space is isomorphic to pi n minus 1 of the fiber. right? Okay, so however, that implies this. Pi n plus 2 of BU is isomorphic to pi n of BU. And then this is isomorphic to that, where omega squared is the twofold loop space. So we get this isomorphism for any n. So on the left-hand side, we have the twofold loop space of the classifying space BU. On the right-hand side, we have BU. Their homotopy groups are all the same for all dimensions. Well, there is a terminology for that. Namely, these two spaces are weakly homotopic to each other. Now, you... Yes, exactly, yeah. So you just iterate this, then omega n plus 2 of BU is weakly homotopic to omega n, the n-fold iterated loop space. Now let's get to the K theory, the high K group, K minus n of x. We know that it's the reduced K group of this suspension of KX plus. It's not x, it's x plus. That's a crucial difference. Now, we learned just 1 minute ago this is isomorphic to homotopy classes of mappings into the classifying space. However, the classifying space has a trivial fundamental group, therefore this passes over to base point preserving maps. Now just write this out. This space is exactly that space. So Sn cross X, then you collapse one fiber. Now, well, then you think in terms of Sn cross X, then you realize that this space is the same or leads to this space. So for every point in X, you fix the point, then you get the map from Sn into BU. So that gives you an element in the n-fold loop space, because the n-fold loop space can be identified with maps of the sphere into your space. So we have this is K group that's isomorphic to this homotopy space. Now if you look at minus n minus 2, you have the same thing, well, with n plus 2. But we know this homotopy equivalence. So this space and this space, they are isomorphic. Therefore, these two are isomorphic. Right. Now, let's get to the proof of version 3. This is about the unitary group. This is a geometric proof of about periodicity. The key idea is to use the Morse theory to compute pi n of SUN. Well, SUN and or UN, their homotopy groups are related. We know that. Right? Now let's first introduce quickly to Morse theory. Suppose we are given a manifold M, and we have a Morse function on the manifold. A Morse function simply means a real value function with non-degenerate critical points. Now look at the sublevel set right here. Now look at another sublevel set with a higher level, C prime, bigger than C. Then you can obtain MC prime from MC homotopically in this fashion. You attach a bunch of cells to this MC where the phi 1, phi 2, etc. are attaching maps. For every critical point of index j, you have one cell, ej. So here, for example, is one cell, here's a two cell. Attaching map maps the boundary of the cell into the lower sublevel space. Here is the higher one, here's the lower one. In the middle, you have a few critical points. Index means the index of the hashing of the function f, which is the same as the number of decreasing directions. Well, this will become clear if we look at one example. Here's two standard examples. Here's a sphere, here's a torus sitting both in R3, so you have the height function z, that's your Morse function. you restrict the height function z to your surface. Here you have two critical points, and minimum and maximum here index 0 because every direction is increasing. There is no decreasing direction. Here two decreasing direction, so index is 2. Now, that homotopy statement tells you here, you pass from the lower level, like 0 level P, to the highest level. What happens is you attach the two cells corresponding to this critical point to the point P. That gives you the homotopy type of the sphere. Now here's the torus, minimum, maximum, and the two saddle points in the middle, each having index 1. Now suppose I want to obtain C prime from C. That's the process. Here's the C prime, I cut it out, I have this one. Then I can just push these two legs down until I'm reduced to this situation. But that is clearly homotopic equivalent to the lower one with one handle attached or one cell attached. Right? So that's the basics of the Mohs theory. Now we want to apply Mohs theory for computing the homotopy group of SUN. However, we are not going to use a Mohs function SUN at all. Instead, we are going to use a Mohs function on the loop space. Right. So here is our space. That is going to play the role of our manifold, like before the sphere or the torus. So here's SUN. In SUN, we have the identity and the minus identity. We consider all loops from I to negative I. That's this space, right? Or continuous maps from the unit interval into SUN with the two boundary conditions. Now here is the idea, right? You want to compute this. However, we know pi I of omega is equal to pi I plus 1 of SUN. So, well, we are going to actually use SUN. Let's assume the even dimension. Right, so n is even. Well, the reason is, well, you can try to do this in UN, but it's more complicated. Yeah. In SUN, the computations become much simpler. Now, we want to use Mohs theory on omega. So we need a Mohs function. What is the Mohs function? The Mohs function is the energy function. Here is one loop. Well, not really closed loop, just one pass, right, from I to minus I. Then you look at this integral. That's the energy. Well, of course, if you look at the all continuous tall, you can't define that. However, you can replace this omega by those You don't have to consider all continuous paths. You only have to consider paths which lie in a nice space so that you can define the energy. Now, in order to define this, you need a metric, right? We need a remaining metric on SUN. And here is the metric. SUN is defined by this. Here's Lie algebra. Lie algebra is, well, the same as a tangent space at the identity. So here we got the definition of the metric. That's a bi-invariant metric. In the beginning, it's only defined at the identity, then you translate it to all points of SUN. So we have a bi-invariant metric on SUN so that we can define the energy. So we got our space omega. Then we got our Mohs function, so we want to do the Mohs theory. Well, the situation here is slightly more complicated than what we saw on the example of the sphere. There is only one minimum point, or on the torus, only one minimum point. Here, there are many minimum points. So let's look at all minimum points. That's all minima geodesics from I to negative I. that means all tall such that the energy is minimal. So that's minimal points corresponding to the south pole on the sphere. Now, well, by the Mohr theory, we have this. Homotopically, omega is obtained from omega min by attaching K cells. Well, each cell corresponds to a critical point, which is not a minimal point, because minimal point is at the bottom, right? The whole space is here. You want to reduce the whole space to the minimum level. So in the middle, you see a bunch of critical points. They are geodesics, but they are not minimal. Right? So that's the basics. Now, in order to understand the difference between the base, the minimum, and the whole space, we need to understand these critical points in the middle, which are not minimal. Here's the key lemma. Every non-minimal geodesic has index at least n plus 2. So what does that mean? That means when we obtain from omega minimum from that to we obtain omega from that, we attach cells of dimension at least n plus 2. Nothing of lower dimension. That means the difference between the whole space and the minimum bottom space lies in higher dimensional homotopy groups, not in lower dimension, because there is nothing lower dimension you attach. So here is a picture, right? Suppose we only attach two cells, no one cell, then you see here you have a loop which is used to define pi 1. You can push it down along inside the cell into the lower level, right? So more precisely, the homotopy group, the relative homotopy groups are all zero if I is less than or equal to n plus 1, so one dimension lower. And that implies this. The homotopy groups are all the same when the dimension is less than or equal to n. So we have gotten the relation between the whole omega and omega min. Therefore, we just have to understand omega min. So what is omega min? Now we want to look at the even dimension. So n is 2n. And here's the lemma. Omega min, remember, that's all minimal geodesics from I to minus I. And this space is topologically the same. So it's a homeomorphic to complex Grassmannian manifold of dimension m in 2m dimensional complex space. How do you see that? Well, this is only lemma. We want to see the details of proof. So we want to understand the element in this space. An element here is a geodesic from I to minus I, which is minimal. So let's start with the geodesic. Because we have a bi-invariant metric on Lie group, so the geodesic is given by this formula. Also because the geodesic starts at I. Now, we want that tau ends up at negative I, so we require this. So we have this and this condition. Now, A is in SU2M, therefore, the matrix A has eigenvalues. Now, this condition implies these equations. For the eigenvalues, when you exponentiate them, you get negative 1. So the coefficients A1, A2, therefore, are odd integer times pi. So we can compute the length of this geodesic. That's integral from 0 to 1 of this, but that's constant. So you just get that. And this is exactly pi times this number. Now, you want this to be minimal. Then the only possibilities k1 through k2m are all either 1 or negative 1. That's the possible smallest value for this. So minimal geodesic is given by this or given by A. And A has eigenvalues, this. Right? A1 is k1 pi, and each k is plus minus 1. Now, of course, the matrix A may not be in diagonal form. Suppose, however, the matrix A is in diagonal form, that's what you see, right? That's your A if you have a minimal geodesic. Now, the matrix A can be thought of as a linear operator on C to M. Then it is completely determined by its eigenspace for the positive pi I, because then you know what is the eigenspace V minus for the negative pi I. So we have a one-one correspondence between A and complex M plane. Right? A corresponds to short the minimal geodesic. So each minimal geodesic corresponds to a complex M plane. So that's why we have this lemma. So the omega mean is the same as the Grassmannian. Now we combine the two lemmas. One lemma says the whole omega is the same as the bottom omega mean in some range of the dimension. And the second lemma says the bottom, the omega mean, is the same as the Grassmannian. So we get this. Pi j of omega, the whole space, whole loop space, is the same as this pi j. Of course, for inside this range. But omega is the loop space of SU2N, therefore we just raise J to J plus 1, we get the homotopy group of SU2N. So this is isomorphic to that. Well, now we need a little more topology. There is this standard fibration with the Grassmannian as the base. This fibration implies the homotopy group of the Grassmannian is the same as the homotopy group of unitary group. Well, you lower the J by 1, and J is inside this range. Well, then we have this. This is isomorphic to that, and this is, well, here is what we were talking about before, except, of course, pi 1, right? So there is a relation between the homotopy group of UM and SU2M. And then this, oh, I guess that's this part, sorry, right? SU2M and U2M, these two homotopy groups are the same as long as we are not at the bottom dimension, right? And this one is isomorphic to this because this is isomorphic to that, and that before is isomorphic to this. Right? On the other hand, this is isomorphic to this. That's another fact. Right? So the homotopy group of unitary group of different dimension, they are the same, well, if certain range conditions satisfied. So in the end, this guy is isomorphic to that guy. So this is exactly the desired bulk periodicity, the version 3. Well, that's exactly the bulk periodicity, right? So M plus 2. So you still get the same thing. Okay, so that's the geometric proof. It's very nice using geodesics inside loop space. Actually, here there is an unsolved geometric problem. So instead of using geodesics, you might want to use disks. But instead of using loops, you might want to use a disk. So maps from the disk into your SUN, right? That's even more natural. Then you want to do the whole the more theory on the space of disk maps instead of on the space of loops. Then you want to follow through, right? The whole process. Well, if you can do that, that would be extremely nice. That's not done yet. The reason is one-dimensional objects are very easy to handle. Two-dimensional maps are a lot harder. So when you do more theory, you might have problem with non-compactness. So you have a sequence of maps which runs off to infinity. So that could be a very nice PhD thesis subject. Now, here let's get to proof of version 1. That's about the higher higher K groups. Right? Now, the key idea is this. Use a family of Fredholm operators and its index bundle to construct the inverse homomorphism. Remember, we already have one site, namely from here to there. That's by the multiplication in terms of the Bott class. Right? We need the inverse map. So the inverse map is constructed by this idea. Now here is the some more details. We start out with S2, right? Because this guy sits in here. Now S2 is just CP1, so we have complex coordinates, and then we can define the debye operator. So we have a complex valued function or even complex vector value function on S2. Then we can define this operator. Right? It's a standard debye operator. Now we want to extend this operator to more general setup. Here F is a vector value function. Now section of a vector bundle is the generalization of a vector value functions, right? So let's consider a vector bundle of complex vector bundle on S2. Suppose I have a section sigma. Locally, a section in terms of trivialization is the same thing as a complex vector value function. Therefore, we can define the debye operator, right? Now the problem is if you use different coordinates, the result will be different. How do you handle that? You use partition of unity, so you can piece them together. So you can define your debye operator acting on sections of your vector bundle on S2. By the way, if your vector bundle is holomorphic, then you don't have the problem. You don't have to worry about the piecing together. The operator is canonically defined. Now, it's easy to see that this operator is elliptic, therefore it's a Fredholm. Right? Fredholm operator means, suppose you have a linear operator between two Banach spaces. Fredholm simply means dimension of kernel is finite, dimension of the co-kernel is also finite. Now, because our debye operator is a Fredholm, so we can introduce this index. Well, numerically, index simply dimension of that minus dimension of that. But let's just take the vector space, take the formal difference. Right. This is a single vector space. Now, the next stage is to look at the family of vector bundles. I don't do anything. I just this is a formal definition. So you can't really subtract this one vector space, the other vector space. It's just a formal definition. Just like we formally introduce a K group, it's one vector bundle minus the other vector bundle, right? Exactly. If I have a family, that's the next stage. So suppose now I have a family of vector bundle on S2, parameterized by the space X. Then, of course, for each base point X in X, for each point X, that's a parameter, I have a vector bundle on S2. Then I have that index, right, on the previous slide. So that's above X. Now I put them together. So above each, so here's X. Then over each X, I have this index. Now, when I run over the entire X, then I end up with this. That's an element in the K group of X. This you should think of as a vector bundle, right? You think of them separately. When you go over all possible X, that gives you a vector bundle over X, and this gives you a vector bundle also over X, then you take the difference. Of course, in general, this is not a vector bundle, because the dimensional kernel might jump from place to place. But this issue can be fixed very easily. So in the end, you get the difference bundle, which is called index bundle. right? That lies in the K group. Now, let's just formalize this. So what do we do here? Well, I was talking about family of vector bundles, but that's the same thing as a vector bundle over the product. A vector bundle over the product gives rise to a family of a vector bundle over S2. So by that construction, for each element here, I get element in the K group. Now here's the definition of the map. I have a negative sign in front, just for technical reason. Now, well, we pass to the K group, right? There's a natural way of passing from here to there. And then, then we pass to this level, because this guy, as we know, is the same as this, and this guy lies inside here. So in the end, we obtain our desired homomorphism, right? And we had already the Bott class multiplication, which is denoted by beta. So now we got the reverse direction. So we just want to show they are inverse of each other. And that would be the proof of the Bott periodicity. It's a very neat idea. Now, how do you see that this homomorphism alpha is the inverse of the beta, the Bott class multiplication? Well, we now try to be a little smart. So let's try to understand general properties of alpha. So there are three basic properties of this homomorphism. First, alpha is functorial. Second, alpha is a key X module homomorphism. And third, alpha applied to B is 1. Now let's first look at A3. So that's very easy to understand, right? B, remember, is a class in here, right? Now alpha applied to B, that really means our axis point. So alpha is our homomorphism. In general, it goes from here to there. Now, when X is a point, this guy is exactly this guy. So we want to show this, right? And X then is a point. Now, how do you see that? Well, B, remember, is B is H minus 1. H is the half bundle. And 1 is the trivial line bundle. Both of them are holomorphic line bundle. So we can use theory of holomorphic vector bundles. Now here are some results, which you are well known. So we want to look at the kernel and co-kernel, right, because alpha is the difference. Now here is 1 equation. The kernel of this, suppose E is a holomorphic bundle on CP1, then the kernel is the same as this. Well, that's the homology in sheaf theory, cohomology in sheaf theory. This is a sheaf generated by local holomorphic sections of E. And that's the zeros, cohomology. So you have this. And co-kernel is identified with that cohomology group. Now, when you have a holomorphic vector bundle here, when E is the trivial line bundle, then we know this group is C and this group is 0. Now, if E is the half bundle, then both groups are 0. So you can compute alpha applied to the Bott class. That's alpha applied to H minus alpha applied to the trivial line bundle. Well, this is 0, right? And this gives you exactly alpha of 1 is co-kernel of 1 minus kernel of 1, so you get exactly 1 in the end. So we proved A3, right? So this involves some non-trivial theory, but it's kind of a simple case of the theory because the base space is plus AP1 in the simplest possible case. Now let's try to understand the meaning of A1 and A2. What is A1? What is the meaning of functorial? Functorial means, suppose I have a continuous map from one space into another. Then I have where alpha defined for that, for x prime. I also have alpha defined for x. Then here I have the equation. That's the meaning of the functorial property. That's one. That's A1. Now what is A2? A2 says we alpha is kx modular homomorphism. That simply means this diagram commutes. So here, from here to there, you use the external tensor product. So you pass to that. And here also, you use external tensor product. Now from here to there, on the left part, you use alpha. On the right part, you do nothing. Here, you simply use your alpha. So you have this diagram is commute. Now, these two problems, A1 and A2, are not hard to show. Well, you have to sit down and then figure out what they really mean. Then you know that's true. Doesn't involve any theory at all. Now, finally, we have one lemma. If we have the three properties, A1, A2, and 3, which we know they are true for our alpha, then we have the desired conclusion. Alpha beta equals identity, beta alpha equals identity. Right? Now, well, one part is very easy. Suppose I look at this part, alpha times beta. Why? Well, let's apply alpha beta to an element in K group, U, so here, by the A2 property, right? Well, first, beta applied to U by definition is B times U. That's simply definition. By the A2 property, alpha applied to BU is the same as alpha applied to BU then multiplied to U. But we already checked alpha applied to B is 1. So 1 times U is U. So the first equation is straightforward. Now, second equation involves a certain switching argument. So in the end, you reduce this to that. Well, that arguments are not entirely trivial, but are very elementary. I don't think I can do very well trying to explain that argument, because, again, you have to write a few lines and be patient and understand what they mean, then you see that. Well, assuming that, then version 1 is proven. So what is the key idea in this proof? You use a Fredholm operator, right? Then a family of Fredholm operator, and construct the index bundle. That gives you the desired alpha. Now, in this particular proof, we use a debye operator. Actually, there are other possible choices. Instead of using debye operator, you can also use some elliptic operator on the disk. Here we look at the sphere. You can also consider elliptic boundary operator, elliptic boundary value problem on the disk. Remember, we have the clutching construction. The sphere is gotten by two hemispheres. Then on this part, you have one operator. On that part, you have an operator. That's another possibility. Then there's another possibility of using the so-called Wiener-Hof operator. Again, you have a clutching construction. Then in the end, you look at a map from the circle S1 into isomorphisms of your vector spaces. And using that, you can define a certain interesting operator. That's, again, a Fredholm operator. So you can, again, construct an index bundle. So there are many, many possibilities here. Debye operator appears to be most natural because we are dealing with CP1. You mean this proof here? No. Not at all. Well, of course, you see something along that line because you are talking about index bundle construction for a family of Fred Holm operators. So, but this is a very simple case. Doesn't require the general machinery. Now, I have been talking about the complex case. Well, here's the statement of the real case. Well, first, for orthogonal group, you look at the limit of infinite limit, right? Then you have this statement. So the homotopy groups are periodic with period 8. Then the K-theory version is similar. Well, here you have period 8. Now, the special case where axis point, you put all the K group together, you have a ring, and this is the ring structure. The rings are generated by three generators with four relations. So that is zero, that is zero, that is zero, and that is zero. Well, that's the end.